Well, today, I guess we pick up where we left off. We're still discussing the male body. Now we're going into the female body. The problems involved in the female body that make it difficult for the male to realize what's going on when we are married, especially in the household of life. The female body is designed for tactile reaction more than the male body, because of the constant contact with children. The mother is always cuddling the child to her. Therefore, the female body has to have more tactile experiences. The sense of touch is more developed in the female body than the male body. But sometimes we don't even notice it. We take it for granted. Well, you have, for instance, the child hurts its leg, and the first thing you do is rub it. You say, come, mother, rub it for you. It'll be all right. And when the mother rubs it, the child feels okay and it goes and play again. The tactile contact being so closely related to the mother and the child is carried over constantly in the body. Because when we live so close to each other, we lose this tactile contact. The male body wants the tactile contact. It wants to generate the tactile contact. But what interferes with the male body is the daily stress that the male body is confronting. The only way the male body and the female body can release this stress is by massage. Now, when the husband and wife are growing up together in the first marriage, this is often felt, but very little of it is done. They need to massage each other. As they grow on and they have their children, and the children growing up and going away, that feeling is no longer there. Yet, inwardly, the feeling is crying out for contact, for this particular reaction. We tend to feel afraid to touch the other person lest there is a reaction, when in reality that is where the body needs more tactile contact by massage. The fact that it is contacting the other person by touch, subtle forces are being transmitted between the male body and the female body. Massage is an art by itself. Sometimes to massage someone can change the whole feeling from love to a feel of disgust. Because in a massage, It's not how much you rub that breaks the pressure, but it's the way the motions are brought into action or brought into expression on the body that releases the pressure. If you do this, after a while the individual gets bored of it, because there is no, there's what is called a peak point of stimulation, then it tapers off and becomes an irritation. They become irritable because it is no longer something of release. It brings up the tension. Now, when you place the finger on the body and apply the pressure, and by rotating clockwise and moving along the body, this now causes the release. To get the feel of that sensation. Well, let's test it so you can understand it. You begin to feel now, using the chubby part of the fingertip. Don't put too much pressure, but just... Huh? Go in a clockwise action, but never rub it this way, because it builds up a heat and then it tapers off. In this area, you don't build the heat up. You're actually setting circles of motion throughout the body. Now, the first area in the male body that is very sensitive is around the neck. That is why the male loves to be massaged around the neck. Because if you do that, it takes the stress off the head. Now the female body is the same. It takes the stress off their neck. But the female body gets more stress relief from around the neck. In the male body, more stress is released from the shoulder, this part here. Well, let's demonstrate it. Unless somebody want to come up and let's turn around. The male body is here. Okay. The female body is here. Whereas here is different. See the difference?
He is building up all my attention.
You want to try it on somebody now? Well, come and I'll show you, so you'll get the feeling that you can do it to somebody next to you. Try it.
out on the male body, you work it here. Female body, you work it here. Which part was the thesaurus? Yes, that's the female body. Okay. Oh, this is where you work on the male body. See, watch my finger and see the pressure. You don't lift the finger, you just rotate it. That's on the male body. On the female body, you see the difference? The female body, you feel what? How it feels now in the female body. See, let them feel the difference when you try on the male body here. Right. And in the female body, it hurts here, and it don't hurt here.
Right. That's right.
Female body, the head part is symbolically like the ovum, therefore the neck of the female body is more sensitive to stress. Now the male body, because it's a sperm penetrating and it's secreted by the male body, therefore the impact cushions. Therefore, all the stress is left down in the shoulder blade. So when the sperm hits, there's a recoil action. And that recoil action leaves the stress. So even though we are not banging our heads symbolically or physically into objects, but we are banging our head into psychological problems every day, the male body is constantly cushioning the effect around the shoulder. That's why they tighten up more here. And a woman tends to tighten up here with the headache in the upper part, not around the shoulder blade. So once you realize the structure and the effect of the shock, how the shock is tapering itself off or carrying itself off in the body, then you must use the correct tactual contact and motion to release it. You want to move it that way. Now, first you work with the head as a tactile release. Then we come to now the spine. Going right away down into the part where the most tactile forces are located, that's it, in the sex region. Because the energy has to rise up back and make contact in the brain. And it's contacting with the medulla. Now the medulla of every human being has the same amount of stress. So that little indent in the back of the head is equal. Both male and female, the stress is equal. Now, in that part, you can massage the same way. Your thumb, and you get a good brace
Yeah, a good breeze.
You got an indent in the back where the head sits on the thumb.
Oh, yeah. Now, from what perspective do you go clockwise? You looking at it go clockwise?
Yes.
Down to the right, up to the left.
Make sure that the head is upside sits on the thumb. So you got the, so once you got it, then you just make it just go down and hold.
Okay.
Both men are feeling bad. That takes the stress. It's taking the stress that is sent back by recoil action into the metal. See, this is the spine, and nearly 80% of the day you are doing this. See? Who sits down like that? Very few of us sit down like that. Most of us. So that recoil shock, that bounce, flips the energy, the impact causes the energy, so send waves up, and bong, you know that, bong, it's primarily exactly what you're doing to the spinal system. You are shocking it all the time by bouncing it. So after a while, you find sedentary activity tends to produce occupational headaches.
And the fact that you're always like that, if you're going to write or type, the sedentary action and the bouncing is sending so much recoil action right back to the medulla. Before you know it, then the eyes start to get tired.
Then, my car trips are so fatiguing.
Huh?
It's like automobile trips are so fatiguing.
Fatiguing, yes. It's the constant bouncing up and down.
Now,
if you're driving in an automobile, over the years of my own experience, it is not wise to drive 2-3 hours steady and then change it and let another person drive. You're going to be tired far more at the end of the trip, and you feel very listless, and you release too much lactic acid into the blood, and you force the heart to work too hard. It is better that if you're driving with someone, to alternate every hour. Even if you can just stretch yourself out completely straight out for the other hour while the other person is driving, bounce it up. If you can just leave that blood flow back, and the bounce back of the automobile bouncing would tend to send the blood now on an evil keel back into the spine. And
he had an experience going up to
Carlisle and come back. See, the same thing you notice if you alternate, because the body would correct itself more than steady driving all at one time and building up the stress. If you have another person driving, once you alternate every hour and you just relax yourself, you find that the blood flow will correct itself, and the recoil action would taper off. And by holding the hand back and let the head rest fairly good in the thumb, you know, it's like you're holding it up, and then just rest where the big finger can go the full length. It should be the full length of the, like that.
Correct. like I'm holding up my head. Like a fish hook. That's like a hook. Being hooked up in that point there. Holding it. And then working it. The more you work it, you take out all the stress from you in that area of the brain. Got it. You're coming down the spine. Along the spine, the pressure is building up. And we want to release the stress from it. So, to release the stress from the spine, there are four primary techniques. There are about at least six or seven secondary ones. We're not to concern the secondary, we're concerned the primary ones. The primary technique of preparing the hands. A good tactile therapist, you know him as a masseur. As a tactile therapist is one who has to develop their hands just like a musician. Just to have nice, soft, delicate hands with tremendous strength in the joints. That's why you practice karate. Every day you give yourself little exercises like that. But train the fingers that they don't bend. And you tap on the meaty part of the fingers. Because you're going to need that type of action to control the flow of the energy. And getting the finger to spread. Try it. It's like stretching it out as far as you can stretch back. Like you're pushing against an invisible ball or something. These exercises strengthen the tactile flow. Now you can do this and strengthen it by pushing against the fist. Now, the next one is the knuckle. You're going to need them, and I demonstrate it to you.
Oh, that's easy to have the pressure there.
You find that as you press against the fingers, you start, some are weak and some are strong. The weak ones, you have to work on them until they feel they lost that sensation of semi-pain or... So you pull it back and as far as you can without hurting it, and let's see where the hurt, work out the hurts. Some of them do hurt, right? Well, you work them with the thumb pressing back like that till you get out the hurt. That means that it's learning to adjust to those pressure. Supposed to do this 5 minutes a day. This is what they call your tactile therapy technique.
Okay, here's another one you have to learn now. You hold the hand
in the indentation here?
Yeah, in the indentation and rotate it.
What does that do?
You'll need it when I show it the exercise when it comes to put it performance. You'll notice, you'll understand what it does. Now we have one we do with the feet, because a good tactile therapist uses feet too. We can straighten out your spine and stretch your back muscles with our feet, and they do have what is called foot massage. Not somebody massage, but with the foot instead of your hand. They walk on your spine. Yes, the they're exercising your own body, preparing it for the tactile side, the loan that limbers you up, the loan that you're applying it to them. Okay, now the primary number one movement is this way, all the time. Now you have to learn to do them individually. Practice it. Now, here's where you're going to work on the feet. So, on your own feet or on the opposite partner's feet, you work around the kneecaps. And you go like individual fingers. Shifting the stress from one finger to the next finger, the next finger, the next finger, final finger. Start again back in the thumb, forefinger, middle finger, ring finger, little finger. Now then you start working up. You always start from the kneecap. You see this little bone here? Well, you...
I just love this. This is the best session we've had so far. I said this is the best session we've had so far. Female body's more interesting.
So, and you hit these side muscles. Now these are the hardest muscles to relax, because in modern society we are driving cars. In a primitive society we have to walk. So they don't
magnetism, you've got to know where magnetism enters. You have seven centers that are magnetic forces.
That's where we come back to your spine.
So, concept, sacrum, dorsal, lumbar.
These are vortices or the magnetic field. They're right there in front of you. And you're always walking in it because it's around you. So the man, the best healers, you'll always find them the rotund tummy.
Right, the stomach's always like that.
Yeah, the best healers that you find, they walk like this.
Oh, so the energies come in the solar plexus.
Yeah. Will you ever see a good healer who is a tremendous healer or a famous healer who can really heal? He walks just like if he's ready to, like a crouch. Because the energy pulls them that way.
It's magnetic energy. And that's why he walks.
Pulls.
Hey, Dan, I wonder something about Captain Cool. Are you familiar with him?
What is the shape of our body?
Very dense, not here.
She's rotund.
If she lays on hands, most of the ones that lay on hands.
She doesn't lay on hands, she
says. The magnetism, you don't have to lay your hands on, the magnetism is there. Once it starts flowing, it's flowing. That's all, it's the magnetism. Just the magnetism flowing. Now we're covering the massage point. We have the rotation, the tapping, the knuckle or pressure, and the chop. These are the four basic ones you'll be always using.
Rotation,
tap, pressure. Now, there are certain areas of the body, and they're called the 20 body parts. The 20 body part technique. By knowing the 20 body parts, you can perform the massage of using any one of the four technique or contact to release the stress in the male body or in the female body. And the 20 body parts begin with the head first, the shoulder, biceps, forearm, the wrist, the chest, back part here on the shoulder blade, around it, here, buttocks, the groin, the side, kneecap, calf, foot. These are the body parts. By working on them. Now, certain body parts respond to certain techniques better than others. For instance, along the spine, punching with the nail responds the highest. Then comes the pressure by the knuckle. Then comes the tapping. And last is the rotation. So you don't get as much effect on the spine by rotating as much as when you tap it or you punch it or you put pressure. There are more stimulation. In the inner movement of the kneecap to the groin, this is no good. There's no stimulation, but this is stimulation. Because you have a lateral muscle that you can hold and rotate. Because it pulls the muscle too, you can pull the whole muscle. fleshy part of the side here. See the fleshy part here? The best technique for that is pinching.
It's right around the teeth.
Pinching. Best technique for that area, pitch it. Now, with the sole of the feet, couple the palm. See, remember I said you have to strain your hand to stretch back. That's where you need it, so it cups. Along the entire body, you use the technique of stretching. This releases the stress for all the cells. Because in scratching, if I rub in the finger like a scratch, we are setting up ultrasonic waves along the line of the movement.
You see that turn
video? Yeah, you want to push it? Okay, everybody try it? Anybody else want to try it too? So they know what they're talking about.
Yeah, that's very
thank you.
Just that little fresh, not too much. And just for a while on the. And I can do the whole body.
Punching with the nail or tapping, then the knuckle, then the chop, then the cupping of the hand, then the pinching, and then the scratch. Now, there is one more, but you have to be very careful with it. And that is the back and forth action of friction, because it has a tendency to shorten itself up. That is, it builds up heat, but then when the heat is built up, it cuts out sensation. You have to be able to rub it and then stop as soon as you feel the heat, and not to continue beyond a certain sense and let the heat do the work. See the difference? If you rub it and as soon as the heat starts, then you take it off and let the heat do the work. But if you rub it and then the heat is building up, the heat itself will cut off and then there's no sensation there no more. You just have to rub it and then let the heat carry through. That's what they call, that's why you use a brisk towel. And it's best after a bath to take a rough towel and rub with a good nap. And take it in sections, don't go all the way like that, take it in sections. Lift, take off in second, and just get the heat to build up. My little pockets of heat. And they, because they have little pockets of heat, they will dissipate into each other, and then the whole body will be glowing. The blood comes to the surface of the skin, and it stays there, and it's, the vitality and the zest, the feeling of the cells are in a higher state of potency or strength. And it's good to have it after a cold bath. Right. And then it tends to push off. It reaches what is called tolerance point. That's why you find between the male and the female, the daily embrace tends to, after a while, taper off. Because it's a dry contact. There is no emulsion or lubricant contact between the male and the female. It's when you have a lubricant or emulsion contact that the cells are kept in a higher level of potency and yearning for each other and the vibratory nature of love is heightened. If you take cream and you rub it on your face after a while, women have that, they do that most of themselves. What is the sensation? Yeah, as you're applying the cream, women are the one who use more creams on their skin, right? Now the sensation of rubbing cream on the skin is very, very stimulating, because the cells are soft and pliable. It has a glassy effect. It tends to stimulate. So when the oils are used now throughout the entire body to massage it, it makes the cells more vibrant. And that feeling of joy or bliss is increased. And the body does not tire. That's why the early Greeks and Romans and Orientals used to go into their baths with scented oils. And the scented oil tend to increase the sensation of the tactile massage, because that's what it's supposed to do. That you take the bath or you massage the body with the oil, so that the body itself now has a higher reaction to feeling and contact. And then the stress is released quicker, because the pores are absorbing the oil or the cream. The best oil for a massage is still an olive oil, because it will go right through the blood. If you just rub it on the surface, it passes right through.
Casey said you could actually feed the body, right?
Yes, with olive oil. It's what you call osmotic therapy. By massage, you nourish the body with a normal polyunsaturated effect of the oil, and you automatically, by massage, reduce your weight by olive oil. Learn a new thing today, huh?
Boy, I'm going to be busy.
Weight reduction can be brought on by osmotic absorption of olive oil through massage, because it will go in and work on that heavy cholesterol fat in the skin and those layers of the epidermis and break them down by the heat and the massage from the external nature. Where sometimes you can't drink it, you know, but it will go right through, because this is its normal action. It goes in right into the system. It's the only oil that has that peculiar ability, to olive oil, to pass right through. But it has to be pure olive oil, not hydrated by heat. You don't want the olive oil to be fired by heat. It must be pure, cold, pressed out, natural olive oil. And that oil will go right into the body when used.
Casey said
it would have
camphor in it,
and
it helped break down
the adipose. Yes, if you use camphor, it'll do that. Now, also, if you use eucalyptus while you're rubbing it, it will clean out the lungs, especially those who smoke. It'll start to, the inhaling of the eucalyptus will start releasing the stress, the tension built up from the nicotine and smoke it.
Rub it on the chest.
Rub it on the chest.
Yeah, speaking of osmosis, would it work if you took a bath and a brine solution across the water to draw the toxins out of your body?
Yes, they have brine solution baths. You do that.
Would that be as good as a sauna?
Yes, but we are not coming to that yet. You're jumping the gun. We're trying to go step by step in this process to understand what we're doing. There's no sense trying to jump one before the other. We're dealing first with oils. We're dealing with water, but we have to have different types of water. First, we dealt with hot water and cold. And we dealt with the carbonated water. We didn't deal with the minerals in the water. We're dealing now with oils. If you run into minerals in the water before, they're fine, then you don't understand what the body is for. Minerals in the water are designed for illness. Their composition is designed primarily for illness. They're not designed for a healthy body. you don't use them on a healthy body. You can swim in salt water. This is okay. But there's a way to use salt on the body that will clean the body in case of illness and prevent illness. So we are not dealing with that right now. We want to understand how the compatibility between the male and the female body is maintained in the household effect or life, so that it gives them that understanding of why the male or the female have these conflicts and what can be done to relieve these conflicts. That the body is a living mechanism and it must be nourished by different ways to maintain balance, so that the rhythms that the body is subjected to would not tend to turn off individuals against themselves or one another. If you find yourself being turned off from your husband or your wife because the body's rhythms are predominant due to the moon's activity on you, and you don't know what to do, then you get into fits and anger. And before you know it, you want to bite your finger, you want to smoke, or you want to drink, you want to eat more food. Just an ego gets the bigger part. We want to understand why this is happening so that we can now observe and carry it into our daily life, that we can ease the stress of the daily living with the other person. Now, the Eastern philosophers all say familiarity breeds contempt. But familiarity is an indication of tolerance levels. You can't have familiarity without a tolerance level. Every object in this world has a tolerance level. That's a level to which it reaches and it's taken for granted. So for what is familiarity? Something you take for granted. There is no more sense of strangeness. So your sense of strangeness keeps balance to some degree. That's why in the ancient time you had the master lived in one room and the wife lived in another room, and the perennial courtship was always going on. The moment they threw away the extra bed and they got into the one bed, the other like going hunting. Challenge. Any new challenge or competition. This is the way the male body gets released. In competition or challenge, in group activity, or trying to go off into areas and find some type of association with the environment that would free it from conflict camouflaging itself, which is not a very practical way. You see, camouflaging is not a good idea to free the stress. It's better to face the stress.
In this society today, where you have more and more complex and subtle approaches to conflict or conquest or aggressive actions.
Yes.
And you have more camouflage. Right.
So camouflaging has a tendency of building up neurosis. That's the danger of the camouflaging. You see, men either ran or fought or was subjugated or dominated from primitive time up to civilized time as a dominant life form in the male body. The male body always did this to survive, to react. And if it couldn't react because the opposing force was stronger, it took to flight. If it took to flight and it was not fast enough, it was caught and dominated. If it was strong enough to retaliate against the opposing force, it became tyrannical. If when it took to flight and it avoided capture, by ingenuity it resorted then to camouflaging. So it was the only way it knew how to survive. So the greater the camouflaging, the greater the tendency to become neurotic. You see? Because sooner or later you run out of camouflages. Right, it's on. Right, this is it. So if you turn around and face and come back to a point of overcoming the situation, then it breaks that pattern. So the stress is released. That's why Yukteswar said, don't run, face every problem and it will cease to bother you. He was actually trying to stimulate the survival pattern which is built into the sperm already to accomplish.
How does ginseng affect this?
The ginseng root stimulates the gonad action and makes the individual feel more virile so that he can shut off the feeling of impotency or the feeling of inferiority. Now, the impotency is brought on, as I said yesterday or the day before, by certain conditions of not facing up, and therefore the tendency to be blocked off. Now, any sensation that depletes the virility, or any condition that depletes the virility of the individual drive, tends to produce this impotency. Ginseng is just a natural root or a natural herb action that stimulates that virility action. It's equivalent to vitamin E. But in vitamin E, it's the anti-sterile vitamin. So vitamin E would make the man be more of a greater donor, and the sperm would have a higher motility action. Ginseng would not do that. Ginseng would give him the sense of bravery or the sense of capability to handle himself, which is a heightened virility.
Does it affect, though, your conscious ability to control your adrenaline or aggressive?
Yes, it would control the adrenaline in the aggressive nature. The ginseng would do that. But you have Adriatica hydrocotyl, which is a better herb for that, because it has a tendency to rebuild the connective tissues. The Adriatica hydrocotyl, which is a better herb, does rebuild the connective tissues. Now, there is another herb which the elephant eats. This herb gives a greater staying power to face problems. It's an anti-stress herb. Right now the name of it just eludes me. I can see it right on top of my shelf on there in the herb shop there, but the name is I have it up in the herb shop. No, not barrage.
So these are other ways as well.
Yes, it builds up stamina and anti-stress.
You eat
them, the herbs. Well, we're going to come into that later on, what are the necessary foods that build anti-stress in the body. But there is one that is I have there right now. I just got to call the name. I know it's a long, big name. And the funny thing, I had the green plants growing here. They brought them from India. They even sold them here in Thailand. For $2 a plant, that you grow it and eat one leaf a day. And the name is eluding me right now. When I go up to the shop, I'll look it up. But it's a plant that you can eat. It's very good for the willpower. Yes, it controls it by will. It's in the food itself. you eat it like a herb, and it builds up the chemical action that will help you to control the stress that the body is subject to.
I had heard that ginseng did that.
Ginseng does that, but it's different than ginseng. The ginseng is a root. And you have to soak it into alcohol to get the effect of the ginseng or grind it. Whereas the other herb is a natural herb growing, and you can eat one leaf a day to get the effect.
Isn't that like taking tranquilizers or something?
No, this is not tranquilizer. This is a natural herb that the body, just like a rosemary or thyme, it's a natural food. It's a food itself. It's a food supplement. It has a certain element that you can't find in other foods. It's a basic food supplement. The elephant eats it. It's food that they feed the elephant on. And it grows mainly in India and Ceylon. And they bring it into this country now to grow. And they're using it as a food supplement. They're growing it to make food supplements with it. So you can't get all the minerals in your food from the basic food that you're eating. There are certain minerals that you're deficient in. Like your trace minerals, you don't have them. A great deal have to be brought up from the ground. And your plant kingdom is the only kingdom that can seem to absorb them properly and transfer it to us without affecting in a detrimental way. Come to that part yet. This is a whole series going right through, friend. You're taking each stage, what is involved in the individual, why he is doing it. In the first place, if you don't know what you are and why you're involved in the marriage and why the individual is trying to have offspring and why he's trying to avoid it, you have to go back into the mentality of the individual to find why he's avoiding offspring, why he's avoiding certain conditions, and what are the factors involved in it. So how can you jump too fast when you don't build up the right structure to understand it? So you have to go gradually understanding why your body behaves a certain way, how you release those stress so that you come to a norm, to behave at a norm. And then you take on the responsibility of marriage to function in that norm. And what are the complex conditions that threaten the norm. If you jump that too fast, then you don't know what is the norm in marriage. So you're going to say now that the norm, the contraceptive is not a norm. The contraceptive is a threat to the norm. It is a way in which the norm has been shifted from one ethical value to another ethical value. The norm is that the male or the female does have offspring. Now, when you shift from that ethical value, then you have to realize what factors cause them to shift to want to use a contraceptive. Well, we come back to the very first thing we're talking about. That was the start of the whole process. Of all the five forces in the human body, the hardest one to overcome is lust. Ego you can overcome, but lust is very hard. But the lust is not brought on as a norm, it's brought on by an abnorm. It's brought on by factors that the body cannot throw off. It's brought on by environmental pressures that cause this abnorm to exist. Until we can understand how it built up itself into an abnorm, we are never able to control it. Man can control lust if he understands how it is constructed. But if he doesn't understand how it's constructed, then he's a victim of the pressures that make him lustful, which is not within his mechanism, as he's not born lustful, but he's born with the drive of the lust from parental thought patterns that are locked into his stream of existence, and by the nutritional balance and environmental pressure that would tend to stimulate the lust. Until we can correct that or understand that, then we can control it. It will still be there. So, go ahead.
I'm just still having a hard time understanding my own experience, what you're saying, how to differentiate between what is normal and what is lustful. I mean, you were saying that the difference would be we get attention bills too much, too often. Really,
when we use the word lust, we are referring to an action outside of the married life with your partner. That is an action outside of that. It's not lust. There is no lust between a married couple.
There's no lust between a married couple?
This is a norm accepted behavior between two individuals on a mutual consent basis by man, woman, and society. How they interact. When the man has taken the woman onto himself and the two have become one flesh, there is no lust.
What if you don't want to have children?
Then you got to go back prior to marriage. What is the cause that he doesn't have that? We have to understand that. That's the norm of that.
But if you're not trying to have children in marriage, if you're not trying to have children in marriage and you're having sex, is that lust?
I did not say it was.
Yeah, I don't know whether you said or not, I'm trying to understand.
I said the action that occurs between a male and a female in marriage has nothing to do with lust. This is a commitment you've made already. You made this commitment when you were married to each other. This is a commitment you made to each other when you got married.
But isn't the ideal state in marriage not to have sexual relationships? Mystical state, the ideal state of by conserving the energy for meditation and whatnot. That's what Master says, that's what Margaret says, and that's what you do about it.
The act of sex was designed, or procreation is designed for producing children. But you think, by any stroke of nature, the very first act of sex produces it? Even by a married couple? The chances for a successful ovulation in a female, even in married couple, by the very first act of sex, are rare.
You know that?
Most people found out quite the opposite.
Huh?
Most people found out the opposite, it seems like.
The chances are rare. Then the chances can happen, depending on the what period it happens in the individual. You see, you have a condition that exists in the male and female situation when they're married.
Well, we were told by more than one person that the, you know, the state to reach is never to have sex unless you're trying to have children. That's the, you know, like purest state for a mystic to be in. In other words, no sexual relationships for any other reason than as the desire to have children.
We cannot discuss that
yet.
To the benefit of others unless we understand what we're talking about today. Why it is not an ideal state to overindulge in it. Until we learn the next lecture, we covered something today that's going to show us why you bring up a question, why the masters are talking, you only do it for the procreation of another species.
Looking at that, to have that relation with a woman, or anything other than procreative, would be just a lowering of those energies.
It has absolutely nothing to do with that. The reason why the masters are talking of not having the act if it's not going to produce the human being, because it is what is involved in the formation of those fluids and the time span they are formed and when they are secreted without the purpose of bringing them to completion, what the body goes through.
Physiologically
speaking, what the body... You notice something? We're jumping ahead of the lecture because that's tomorrow. Here in the gonad area where the formation of it, it's a direct link back to your medulla oblongata. This is the medulla oblongata right here, and the spinal cord runs right down here and then connects to the heart area, then connects down into the endocrine system, and then right down into the gonad and the testes, where it's been formed. These fluids are formed here. Now, where is the fluid trapping? What is it? What is this particular organ trapping? Do you realize what it's trapping? To build up a sperm? It's trapping secretion from the brain. Brain cells.
They travel down
via the medulla to be stored up here to form it, and equally through the ovum. I have diagrams of this to show you in detail how it's trapped and brought down. But I can't jump ahead until you understand why the factors in your life are leading you to be abnormal. The act of sex is the least condition. It is the formation of the things that go on inside that make the no-no by the masters. You are actually secreting brain cells that are trapped and built up to shape that sperm. Every doctor knows that.
So you're like wasting your brain cells.
You are, yes, to a certain extent. Throwing away valuable brain cells through a release.
But if they're down here, right?
Yeah?
You're always throwing something away.
Yeah, but not brain cells.
I don't know.
You're never throwing it. It's always reabsorbed. The only way it can leave your body is via the organs of the sexual rhythm.
If you have the brain cells stored in the gonads, are you having any good use from them if they're down there anyway? I mean, is there any harm in losing them?
If there's every day in 24 hours, you are secreting them down your spinal cord right down into that area. It's going right down and be stored up. And it takes 3 months to form the sperm in the male body. from the precipitation of the brain cell. And the amount of brain cells that have to come down to build up in 1 ounce of secretion, and approximately 3,000 or 4,000 sperm in 1 ounce of secretion. Now, it takes about 3 months to build that up. Your body cannot build it faster than that. There is no way your human body can build up that or store cells in the form of the sperm in the human body and rest necessary now for release. Now, your cell salts are built around that principle already. We haven't come to all that because we can't. You can't jump into it unless you understand. And the woman's body is going through the same thing. Hers is changing in every 28 days. Her brain cells are drawn down faster from her body every 28 days to build up the ovum, because the ovum also utilizes brain cells. When I bring the chart down and draw it out and show you how from the medulla oblongata, everything goes right back into the regenerative organs. There is a direct link all the way through. That every doctor will tell you that the act of procreation is merely a mental impression. The feeling is a mental impression that actually we don't have no sex life unless we are stimulated by the mind, because the conditions are formed by brain cells. There would be no craving if we were never stimulated. There are substances that are deposited there, secreted out from the brain. So the brain has a lot to do with it. Now the reason why the master is talking that it should only be used for the offspring, because other masters are being born or higher intellect are born, is because if you degenerate the body, you have a degenerate brain and a degenerate circuitry formed to pull in a lower entity of a lower caliber of consciousness. If you hold your consciousness at a higher level, then you attract an entity of a higher consciousness. So the personal discipline on the physical body becomes important. Otherwise, a master would not emphasize that. He knows definitely that brain cells are being lost in the discharge of the energy. See, that's the only reason. Now, sublimation of the act is reversal of precipitated brain cells that are stored in the lower regions now, that must be pulled up by paraphysical methods to reabsorb itself back into the brain.
So you can bring it back up.
Well, that's what the technical sublimation is. We'll cover all that. You asked for a tremendous session. We haven't begun to throw the book at you yet. You couldn't even take it. And I don't even think we'll ever cover all of it in this session. Because there's a whole lot to the being a man or being a woman, let alone trying to live a householder life. The householder life is taking into consideration every aspect of creation. You can't just up and jump each phase, because it is involving our existence or survival or economics or association with each other and the continuation of the species. The householder life is involved with that. So we have to know how we are constructed. We have to know how these forces are precipitating down in the body. We have to understand how we can waste them and what we actually are wasting. What we are actually wasting is precipitated brain cells. And the brain cells carry all the data inside of this particular makeup. You see, the early disciplines that they lay down on the individual were not laid down just for to thwart
the individual or make him into some type of individual that has no feeling and live some sort of a restricted life. Within the married life, it is accepted and understood that it's not possible that in one activity there can be another offspring. It may take many, it may even take one. But this is accepted in that particular arrangement because there is no sense of guilt during the activity with the married person. Outside of it, there's always these two forces, violence or guilt. You see, there is the condition. That's why we are using forces that are formed out of the brain. And when we apply certain attitudes to release these forces formed out of the brain, electrically, we create a distortion. And the result can be tragic in the individual's life or in the offspring's life. So they have seen too many of these things on the inner plane. You know that premature release by the male body
leaves electrical forms of unfinished